Thanks, Peter. And thanks, everybody, for coming along. And I'm very pleased to be here and have an opportunity to talk to you about the new authority and the Basin Plan and really what is a pretty major, I guess, paradigm shift in terms of water management, at least within the Murray-Darling Basin. I guess every person in this room is probably, like me, been exposed to media coverage about the state of water resources and the state of the environment in the Murray-Darling Basin almost every day, almost for as long as I've been working in the authority and before that the commission. So the last 4 or 5 years have just been wall-to-wall issues about water management. I guess there are two things I'd say at the outset. One is my job and the job of the authority in producing the Basin Plan is not a milling job to produce a magic silver bullet which will resolve this problem in the blink of an eyelid. We're embarking on a course of action which is going to take a very long time to ultimately play through all the water management arrangements in the basin. And it's a process which is being done under the auspices of the Commonwealth through the New Water Act, and I'll take you through that in a few moments. But it's being done very much in cooperation with the jurisdictions. And, you know, a lot of the media commentary that has been around, I'm conscious I'm in Melbourne, in Victoria, about Victoria on the sidelines and not supporting. Can I say that right at the outset, the operations and the way that the authority is working with the jurisdictions is highly cooperative, and all the jurisdictions are being very thoroughly involved, because at the end of the day, it's people within those jurisdictions who are the water users that will be impacted by the new plans. I guess the other point about that I make about the fact that it's a long-term plan that we're putting in place, I mean, we're getting a glimpse perhaps already through extreme drought over the last decade. It may be a step change in climate, who knows. But the variability that's existed in the Australian climate and in water resources in the Murray-Darling Basin for the last 100 years is clearly going to continue in the future. But we need to be conscious of the changes that are taking place. And the changes that have taken place, I guess, in public and community perceptions about water management, and that's been reflected in new, in the new arrangements that have been put in place. So, briefly, I guess on a historical note, the management of water within the Murray-Darling Basin has been on a collaborative basis for just about as long as Federation. 1915, the River Murray Commission was put together and an agreement was struck. The basic elements of that agreement were just put into legislation in the Water Act 2008 with very little change. So it's an enduring piece of water sharing arrangements and that have really stood the test of time over a long period, but they will continue to be revised in terms of the way that they are implemented through under the Basin Plan. The River Murray Commission existed till 1986. From 86 to 2008, we had the Murray-Darling Basin Commission, which took the responsibilities beyond water river management into catchment management as well, and looked at the entire system, not just water management. But the new agreement under the Water Act shifts that, and instead of working in cooperation, it's much more to enable the Commonwealth, in conjunction with the Basin States, that point I made earlier, to manage the resources in the national interest. So it's very much a new paradigm. The Water Act itself does exactly as I've just said, enables the Commonwealth, in conjunction with the states, to manage the resources. It is, and this is a point of some interest, I guess, The main components of the Water Act are founded on Commonwealth powers alone. There have been referrals of powers from the jurisdictions in some matters, but the essential elements in terms of developing the Basin Plan, the Commonwealth had previously developed on the basis of their own powers, and largely they relate to international agreements and then other things in relation to optimising economic, social, environmental outcomes. and ensuring environmental sustainability in the context of managing economic returns. That is a fundamental difference in this piece of legislation to most other water management legislation, in that it is very clear that there are sustainability obligations which need to be met, and then once those are met, we, having regard to those, we need to look at the other economic and social impacts. The key roles under the Water Act established the authority. The Murray-Darling Basin Commission was abolished in December of last year and replaced by the authority. All of the existing functions and staff of the old commission moved into the authority, with only two staff didn't transfer, so 189 out of 191 staff transferred. We've recruited some additional staff now into my area in terms of basin planning, and to a large extent those people have come from all over the basin. We've got a very strong mix of state-based water planners in that group. The Water Act also set up additional functions for the NWC, the National Water Commission, in terms of auditing the implementation of the Basin Plan. As mentioned a little earlier as well, it created a role for the ACCC in terms of water charging and market rules. Water trade rules themselves still reside with the authority. I guess in simple terms, the trade rules are those rules about hydrology, in effect, about where you can move water. The water market rules are much more about the economics of the of water trading. The BOM, the Bureau of Meteorology, has got a whole range of new powers as well in terms of water information and water accounts. And of course, the Commonwealth Minister, Penny Wong, supported by her Department of Environment, Water, Heritage and the Arts, has a fundamental role in this. At the end of the day, the authority, the Murray-Darling Basin Authority, makes a proposed basin plan, and I'll take you through the steps about how we how that is developed. But at the end of the day, the Commonwealth Minister alone will make the decision to legislate the plan. The Water Act also binds the states and other agencies. As I said before, water resource plans are instruments of state legislation, and states will continue to be responsible for developing water resource plans, water sharing plans, bulk entitlements in the case of Victoria, consistent with the requirements of the Basin Plan. Plan also binds the operating authorities in terms of river regulation and delivery. And the water resource plans that are prepared by the states, as I said, need to be prepared consistent with the requirements of the Basin Plan. And in fact, they are accredited by the Commonwealth Minister on the advice of the authority, not by the relevant state minister. So once the Basin Plan is in effect, and a water resource plan, for example, in New South Wales, water resource plans currently listed under Schedule 4 in the Water Act expire in 2014. Those water resource plans will be remade, but they are then accredited by the Commonwealth Minister under the Water Act. And those plans are then enforced by the authority. But all of those arrangements, obviously, between the Commonwealth and the states in terms of accreditation and enforcement are things that will be further developed over the next 2 years. The agreement, as I mentioned, I'll very quickly go through this. The Murray-Darling Basin Agreement, which had been around since 1915, with only really major amendments when the Snowy Scheme came online in the 50s, that agreement establishes a ministerial council. The Murray-Darling Basin Commission had a ministerial council which had up to three ministers from each of the jurisdictions. So just picture running along there to a meeting to get a decision out of 15 ministers. That was a ton of fun. The new ministerial council has one minister from each jurisdiction and a new Basin Officials Committee, which in effect has replaced the old commission. And again, that's one official from each jurisdiction. In the case of Victoria, somebody asked me earlier, it's David Downey from Department of Sustainability and Environment is the Victorian BOC member. That agreement still confers all the powers in relation to river regulation. The water sharing arrangements are set through the Ministerial Council and the agreement. It governs river operations, state water shares, construction and operation of the infrastructure along the river from Dartmouth Dam right through to the barrages at Goolwa, also the a number of other schedules to that agreement in relation to salinity management and water trade and the Snowy Mountains scheme. So in a nutshell, the new governance arrangements really have the Water Act creating these arrangements where the Commonwealth Minister makes the decision on the Water Act. The authority, that's our office in Canberra, prepares that plan in consultation with the Ministerial Council, the jurisdictions, the Basin Officials Committee. So, you know, the image that was partly presented in the press of a standalone group acting almost separately is not at all the real picture. There's a very strong consultative and cooperative basis for the development of the plan. The authority itself is a six-person authority. It's a somewhat unusual beast as well, in as much as it is a Commonwealth statutory authority, and it is a part of, the authority is part of the environment portfolio, which in itself is interesting. At the Commonwealth level, the responsibility for water policy has moved from agriculture to the environment over the period of about 5 or 6 years. When I was first involved a decade or so ago, all of the responsibilities for water policy were in the agriculture portfolio or primary industries and energy portfolio. So that there's been a shift there. The authority comprises a chair, Mike Taylor, who a lot of people would know, who was formerly a head of a department in Victoria and at the Commonwealth level. A chief executive, Rob Freeman, who was formerly head of the Department of Land and Water and Biodiversity Conservation in South Australia and is proudly a Queenslander, particularly when we get to state of origin. And then the appointments announced last week, Professor Barry Hart, who's an ecologist, Dr. Diana Day, who is a hydrologist, Diane Davidson, who has an irrigation background, and David Green, who's an economist from Queensland and has done a lot of work with the Queensland Natural Resources Commission. So that group of people have been appointed, and the first meeting is on the 1st and 2nd of June. The job of the authority effectively is to prepare, monitor and enforce the basin plan and advise on the accreditation of the state water plans. Now, there are a whole series of functions that are laid out in the Water Act, but it does include establishing water rights information service, and that will be done in conjunction with the BOM, Bureau of Meteorology, measure, monitor, report on water resources, and most of these functions have to be incorporated in the basin plan. Engage with the basin community in developing the plan, and there's both statutory and non-statutory processes for that, and then all the functions of the former commission. The basin plan itself is obviously, I guess, the key function that I'm involved in, and that's to develop a plan for integrated sustainable management. It is a legislative instrument. It needs to be done in the blink of an eyelid. We have a political commitment for the basin plan to be made in 2011. We are aiming to prepare a proposed basin plan by the middle of 2010. That is about 12 months away. There's a statutory period of consultation which follows that, which will involve revision of the plan in light of comments that come forward. So unlike a lot of planning documents where once something is released it becomes pretty much set. The way that the Act is written is it's very much about releasing the proposed plan, which is developed essentially on the basis of science and evidence, and then going through a consultation process, and that's spelled out in legislation. That could take between 10 and up to 16 months. I guess the important thing is that the timing to prepare the proposed basin plan essentially means that there is no capacity for further research or new work in developing the plan. We have to rely on what is already available, and there's a lot of information available in the various jurisdictions and scientific agencies. But there will be, and I have to be absolutely clear about, there will be plenty of uncertainty. The one thing we have very good information on is in relation to economic and social information. In terms of environmental information, it is very patchy. There are some areas of the basin where there is a great deal of information, a lot of work being done, places like the Coorong, the Macquarie Marshes, Gwydir Wetlands, Narran Lakes, Barmamoor Forest, most of the Murray Channel, but there are other large slabs of the basin where there is very limited information. I won't take you through each one of these, but the job for us in preparing the basin plan is very largely spelled out in the Water Act itself. There are 14 mandatory elements which must be in the basin plan, and we have really structured ourselves to ensure that we deliver on each one of those mandatory elements. The key ones, or I guess the challenge for us, and this is where it is different, is water planning has been happening in Australia, obviously, and within the basin for many, many years. But this is the first time where we have to do that planning looking at the basin as a whole. We have to look not at it and the political boundaries that exist, but as a physical unit. The plan will be science and evidence-based. That is the requirement in the Act. It's important that we look and recognise that this is not about a history of extractions. It's about what the system requires to be sustained. But also, in the same light, we recognise that we're not starting off a blank sheet of paper. The environment is fundamentally changed. There are all sorts of economic realities out there in terms of businesses and communities, and so all of that needs to be taken into account in developing the basin plan. The central challenge, pardon me, I'll just get a glass of water. Water Act is a requirement that we have to define what is an environmentally sustainable level of take. And there are a whole series of issues there which will involve judgment by the authority, by the six-member authority, judgments about what are key environmental assets, what are key ecosystem functions, what is the productive base, what are the outcomes we're looking for, and then the decision about what would compromise those functions. So that is a very significant challenge for the authority itself to define those key assets and functions, and then to set a level of water extraction that will avoid compromising those values. The key elements in the plan, I'll just quickly jump through these. We have to set a sustainable diversion limit, which is the maximum long-term average quantity of water that we can take on a sustainable basis. That will not compromise those values. And there is a component within the plan which allows us to also set temporary diversion provisions, that once the sustainable diversion limit is struck, if it resulted in a significant reduction in water for consumptive use, it could be phased over a five-year period, the reduction. The SDL itself, the Sustainable Diversion Limit, is only part of a triumvirate of documents, really, that are at the heart of the Basin Plan. An Environmental Watering Plan, which is essentially the plan to allocate the water outside the Sustainable Diversion Limit into the environmental assets and ecosystem functions. That will probably largely be based on flow regimes to environmental assets. But we also have to have a salinity and water quality plan that goes hand in hand with the environmental watering plan and the sustainable diversion limits, because it may well be that there will be particular parts of catchments where we will have to set a diversion limit at a particular level to deliver a water quality or a salinity output. Because one of the problems, one of the products, I guess, of river regulation and extraction is that change in flow patterns mean that nutrients and salts in particular, but nutrients don't move through the system as well as they would have under natural conditions. And that's in nobody's interest, including the irrigation community or water users generally. Water quality is better enhanced as long as you can get the right sort of pulsing and movement of water through the system to transport nutrients and transport salt through the system. And obviously we've also got the water trading rules, which are fundamentally important. And we were chatting earlier, a couple of us, about how important water trade already is in terms of the economy. I just put this slide up because most people are probably aware of, heard of the cap in the Murray-Darling Basin. And I just, it's a comparison between the existing cap as it currently exists and the new sustainable diversion limits. The cap was for surface water only. Our requirement under the Water Act is to do this for ground and surface water. There is no surprise to anybody involved in the water industry that groundwater extractions increased the moment there was a cap on surface water extractions where people could substitute one for the other. The cap was based on historic levels of water use. It was simply a line in the sand to prevent any further growth in water extractions. I was working for Bob Collins when he was minister in 94 when the cap was put in place. And that whole discussion, I was his commodities advisor, I actually wasn't his water advisor, but the whole discussion at that time was really about let's draw a line in the sand because the rate of growth of extractions in the basin was almost on an astronomical growth plane. The difference with the diversion limits, the SDLs, is we need to then determine what are environmentally sustainable levels of extraction. So a fundamental difference. And the cap was by agreement through the Commission and was not really enforceable other than through some of the state water sharing plans. The SDLs that will be set under the Basin Plan are enforceable by law under the Commonwealth Act. Now, we're about to release a document called a concept statement which outlines a whole lot of detail about what the Basin Plan is and how it works. But these are two slides. I've got two slides out of this which are actually quite important. Does this one have a pointer on it? It does. So what we've got here is before the plan is made, basin-wide issues, those sorts of issues which are really water resource plan issues and local issues. At the moment, we clearly have shared strategies through the old Murray-Darling Basin Commission and through national approaches in terms of water quality and salinity, native fish strategy, all those sorts of things employed there. But in the water sharing areas, each of the jurisdictions have different arrangements. Frankly, their instruments are called different things. They are quite different. Philosophically, almost, the bulk entitlements in Victoria are quite different to the water resource plans in New South Wales or the water sharing plans in New South Wales. They all have different time frames and they're expiring at different times and they have a different life cycle, 10, 15, 5 years. And that's what we have at the moment in terms of water sharing arrangements. What we will have after the Basin Plan is the plan itself cutting across those basin-wide issues and down into the water resource planning issues, setting the requirements for these plans here to reflect the requirements of the Basin Plan. These will still be done by New South Wales, Victoria, or each of the jurisdictions. They all will have, under the Commonwealth legislation then, a consistent life expectancy. They may or may not be called, we've simply called them all the same thing here. They may well have local titles in terms of continuity of business for people, but they all will have slightly staggered timeframes in terms of starting. All of the existing arrangements that are in place for water sharing are currently grandfathered under the Water Act in Schedule 4 of the Water Act. It's not quite all of them are in there at the moment. All of them except for the Victorian ones are in there. They will be added by regulation at some time in the next little while. And they are protected and continue until their end point in their current life expectancy. So in the case of Victoria, that's 2019. In New South Wales and Queensland, it's 2014. When we make the Basin Plan and it's made in 2011, this is what it will apply to. And this is something that many people don't realise. The plan gets made, middle of 2011, by the Commonwealth Minister. The first water resource plans which currently exist, which will expire and come under the new Basin Plan, are a few small water sharing plans in South Australia. Mallee prescribed wells, which is about half a dozen or 50 users, very small volumes of water. By the middle of 2014, all of the New South Wales and the Queensland water sharing plans will be remade under the basin plan. So at that point, 60% of the water from the basin will be covered by the new arrangements in the basin plan, and then the Victorian ones come online in 2019. Two points of interest. When the basin plan is made, if there is a water resource anywhere which does not have a water sharing plan in place or it grandfathered under Schedule 4, any new plan must immediately be made consistent with the basin plan. Right, there is no time frame, no leeway. It has immediate effect. If the basin plan is remade again, say in 2016, the authority can revise the plan at any time. If it is remade in 2016, the revised plan does not have effect for 2 years, because it's this issue about certainty for water users, people understanding the arrangements. So there is then, after the first making of the plan, every other time the plan is amended or remade, there is a two-year window. So that's the period of effect. So I'll just go back. Before the basin plan, a whole set of separate arrangements in the jurisdictions, the basin plan itself applying some consistency across those arrangements, including timelines, and progressively coming into effect. Without any further amendment to the basin plan, and this is my point right at the start about it's not a magic silver bullet that fixes anything instantly, the basin plan, the first basin plan made in 2011, without further amendment, would have impact on all water resource plans in the basin by 2019. That seems a very long time, but in a water business and a water planning world, the reality is that people plan businesses. The reality is that things do change, and they could change rapidly. You know, if we get a very wet period between now and September, which I certainly hope we do, a lot of the very current pressures will be off. But the fundamental underlying issues that drove the Commonwealth and the states to agree the legislation to put this in place, they will still be there. So. And that's the last slide I've got, which is our timeline as to where we're at. Right now, we're in this first phase, which we call getting started, where we've been going around essentially talking to the jurisdictions about their planning arrangements and how they work, forming the consortiums of professional groups, including we've got CSIRO working with us and the states to do the modelling work. For the basin plan, we've got the Australian Bureau of Statistics leading a consortium of ABARE and BRS doing the first cut of social and economic work. But now we've got an authority in place appointed last week. The business about starting to understand and prepare and draw all of these disparate elements together in a very short time frame, that gets underway. Middle of next year, we release a proposed basin plan, and as I said, then statutory periods of consultation, and that probably lasts for almost 12 months. During that period of time, we receive comments. All of those comments we receive, we have to make publicly available, subject to the person who sent them in's agreement. We have to make our responses publicly available. The Ministerial Council has to look at the plan and provide comments to the Commonwealth Minister, so there's a very complex process of review during that period of time until the basin plan currently scheduled to be made in the middle of 2011. So I think I'll leave it there. Thank you very much and enjoy your lunch.